All right, this is Gary Parrish from CBS Sports. It's now Wednesday, December 23rd. We're 2 days away from Christmas. This is the Eye on College Basketball podcast. I'm joined, of course, by Matt Norlander and Sam Bassini. It was a fun night of college basketball last night. Virginia beat Cal in overtime. Xavier is actually down 18 at Wake Forest, ends up winning that game. Iowa State won at Cincinnati, bounced back from that loss to Northern Iowa over the weekend. Purdue handled Vanderbilt at home. DePaul killed George Washington, which ruined a drunk bet. Pretty upset with Mike Lonergan right now. But I think the highlight of the night was a really fun game between Michigan State and Oakland. 20,000 fans at the Palace, top-ranked team in the country, playing without its star, Denzel Valentine. Michigan State's down 13 at the half. Kay Felder is killing. Michigan State eventually wins 99-93 in overtime. Felder finished with 37 points and 9 assists. Brent Forbes got 32 points for Michigan State. Norlander, how much of this did you see? I know there was a lot going on last night. How much of the Kay Felder show did you see?
I saw all of the Kay Felder show. I went multi-screen.
Love and, the Kay Felder show.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you wanna take the first 15 minutes of the podcast to talk about your column in Kay Felder, I'm not going to stop you. But before we get to that, huge of him to show up like that, yep. Because obviously that's the best team Oakland's played this season. And you can often have situations where mid-major stars will run into big-time teams and they won't have great games just because, obviously, that's 1A, 1B, 1C on the scouting report. Michigan State was unable to stop Felder, who, by the way, had a BS charge call on him that put him out of the game in overtime, his fifth foul with an offensive call. So if that doesn't get called, maybe Oakland can hang on and steal it, but unfortunately they couldn't. Michigan State gets a really good test. Oakland and Valparaiso are the two best teams in the horizon, and unfortunately there's not going to be a situation where both of those teams can reach the tournament, but you would think that one of the two will end up getting to March, and that'll be good either way, because one, Valpo is the better team, and Valpo has the ability to get some wins, or you got Felder, and let's be honest here, anytime you've got college basketball player who stands under 6 feet and can just light it up in bunches, that's just something that people automatically flock to. So either way, the horizon should be well represented in the NCAA tournament come March. For Michigan State, great win, no Valentine. The way they responded, actually, you'll notice with Michigan State, with Xavier, and with Iowa State, even though Iowa State's not undefeated, those three teams, kind of legitimate teams, all faced significant double-digit deficits last night, and all three came back and won.
Was Iowa State down double digits?
I
thought they were up.
Cincinnati was down double digits.
Yeah, I thought Iowa State
You're right.
was
Cincinnati
up
was twice
digits,
down by 13.
Right.
So
your point's your point. Like those were good. Like those are all good wins. Xavier winning at Wake is a good win. Michigan State.
They were all away from home, yeah.
Yeah, Michigan State being, technically a neutral site game and down significantly without Denzel Valentine. Like, if you get down 13 points without your best player, like, you might lose no matter who you play, no matter who the opponent is. And so for them to rally, impressive. And then Iowa State obviously going in and beating a good Cincinnati team, impressive. Sam, I had a lot of people ask me this yesterday. I'll just ask you. Kay Felder. Can he play in the NBA? Is he even on an NBA radar?
Oh, I mean, I think he's certainly on the radar. I mean, there are 300, 400 college basketball players that are on the NBA radar.
That's
not
true.
To the right scouts. No, I mean, they track everyone. They try and make sure that they're not missing anyone. And Kay Felder's certainly a guy that they know well. He's taken a step forward this year, certainly, into a way that there's a chance that he could play in the NBA. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, he's explosive. The jump shot is the key to me. I mean, I did not personally expect that jump shot to be as good as it is, but it's awesome right now. I mean, the guy can't miss. You saw that step back, like crossover jumper. Whose face did he hit that in? That was absurd. Like, was
that
totally
in Forbes' face? I don't know.
It was either in Forbes or TumTum, I think. Right. TumTum's face. Like, it was unreal. If you can shoot off the dribble like that, you can pass like he can, you're going to have a shot at any size. I mean, I think Isaiah Thomas is proving that right now with the Celtics. He's athletic enough. If you've seen some highlight films of him, he throws up like alley-oop dunk sometimes, like, and he's the one dunking it. So it wouldn't be crazy at all to see Kay Felder play in the NBA. I do think he's probably a four-year player, which means we're lucky enough to get him for another year. And he's going to throw up records. I think that that's what a lot of people haven't figured out yet. Like, I wrote about this last year, that he was on pace to finish like in the top three or four all time in the NCAA in assists. That's only gone up this year. If he averages like 9 assists a game again for the rest of this year and throughout next year, I want to say that he's within like 20 of first place all time. So we're going to see some pretty heavy Kay Felder highlights for the next year and a half, I would say.
Has anybody ever, and I only ask this because, you know, he's number two in scoring in the country and number one in assists in the country. Has anybody ever led points per game and assists per game same year?
I can't think of anyone that could.
The closest thing I can think of is, didn't Kurt Thomas lead in points and rebounding?
Yeah, he did. He did.
Seems like points and rebounds, like Michael Beasley. Points and rebounding is much easier because you can get points off rebounds. You know, like I think Michael Beasley was up there pretty good in the points and rebounds, rankings for the country. But like points and assist, like I don't know of anybody who's ever done that. I mean, this is something we could obviously look up. But
I don't think so. It'd be amazing and awesome if he did it. And Oakland has a way, by the way, of just. Let's give Greg Campy some love here because, you know, you had Travis Bader, kind of just a complete unknown who ended up setting the record for most three-pointers in college. He put Keith Benson was just turned into a terrific, terrific, terrific college player. Got a look at the league, and I'm blanking Reggie.
Reggie Hamilton, I believe.
Hamilton, thank you.
Right? He had Raul Marshall as well.
Oakland is just, there's always something interesting happening with that program, and Campy's one of the more respected guys in the profession. So whether it's them or Valpo, again, representing the Horizon, the NCAA tournament will be better for it. So.
For folks who don't really have a good grasp of what we're talking about, I will back up just a little bit. Kay Felder, he obviously plays at Oakland. He's a lightly regarded a recruit coming out of high school, mostly because he was only 5'8" coming out of high school. He's only 5'9" now, which is why it's a question about whether he could play in the NBA. At 6'2", nobody's debating whether he could play in the NBA, but he's a little bitty guy. He's thick, he's built, you know, but he's not skinny, but he's really, really small. And so I'm sitting in the airport on Sunday, like I've got a flight delay, right? And so I knew that he had gone for like 38, like Saturday night at Washington, 38 points, 9 assists. And a lot of people are tweeting about him. And I start Googling, and I'm like, nope. not Googling to find out who he is. Googling to see if anybody's ever written about. Has anybody ever told a story? Nobody's ever told a story, but certainly not on a national level. And so I just like, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to talk to Kay Felder tomorrow and talk to Greg Campy tomorrow because they're playing Michigan State on Tuesday night, and the timing ended up working out well because you get a fabulous game and a great performance. So it worked out from my perspective. But this is—it's even more. I just sort of assumed because anytime there's a little bitty guy at a mid-major who's completely a statistical monster, like you just assume there's got to be a story there. I have no idea what it is, but there's got to be a story there. So, how about this? So Campy and those guys at Oakland targeted him because he's a local kid. When he was a sophomore in high school, and they target him because they think if he stays small, they can get him. Like if he does, as long as he doesn't grow, the high majors will stay away. So Greg Campy basically spent a couple of years, 3 years maybe, like hoping that Kay Felder doesn't grow. Like, I need you to stay short. It's such a weird, twisted way to approach. And obviously you have no control over that. But like, you go to bed every night and you pray, please God, take care of my family, peace in the Middle East, and do not let Kay Felder grow. You know, like that's sort of the way you go. Mm-hmm. And
trifecta, no doubt about it.
Eventually, he's so good and so explosive that some Atlantic 10 schools came in at the end, but none of the power conference schools, nobody offered him a scholarship. He's essentially at Oakland because he was a 5'8" point guard coming out of high school. But Campy, and this was, I don't know that I've ever heard of this before. Campy said he was so concerned that they would lose him if they took a point guard in the class of 2012, the year that would have been the year before Kay Felder enrolled at Oakland. He said, we didn't have a point guard on our roster, so we needed a point guard. But I was scared if I took a point guard just ahead of his class, other schools would come in and say, Oakland took a point guard, you know, last year. They've got a freshman, because whoever we took to play that position, they would have been our starting point guard as a freshman. And other schools would have come in and said, they've got a starting point guard who's a freshman. You're not going in there and playing. Be careful. And he said, I didn't want to give anybody, any staff in America, an opportunity to do that. So I decided not to take a point guard, which means we played the entire season with no point guard. And I think they finished right around 500 that year. But he was like, I knew if I didn't screw it up, we're getting this kid. And I knew this kid was special and he would be our starting point guard from the moment he stepped on campus. So I played an entire season without a point guard simply to show him, you're my guy. Nobody else is my guy. You're my guy. And while I have heard of coaches not taking players at certain positions ahead of a certain player's class, like that's pretty common, the idea that you would do it at the expense of not playing with a point guard for an entire season is pretty radical, right?
Campy is unlike pretty much any other coach in the country when it comes to that kind of stuff and the stories he'll share and the things he'll do.
He was great.
I mean, the Bader thing, like I mentioned Travis Bader, I did a story on him a couple years back, year and a half back, I guess, when he was breaking the all-time college three-point record. And that only happened, he didn't even realize what he had in Bader. A couple guys, a couple big-time starters had missed the team bus heading out to a game, and it was the first game of the season, and Campy didn't want to have to sit these guys, but he's like, I you know, you got to make an example in the first game of the year, otherwise they're going to take advantage of it and all that stuff. So he goes, you guys missed, they didn't miss the bus, they were late by like 5 minutes or whatever. He's like, you're late, you're not playing in the game or whatever. And because of that, he puts Bader in, not really knowing, and he kid goes off like 5 or 6 shooting from 3-point range, and so suddenly discovers he's got this really reliable 3-point shooter. Had no idea, may not have known for a year or two if not for that. So yeah, he's full of interesting stories and uncommon occurrences that kind of bring his program some good publicity.
Sam, meantime, Virginia beat Cal in overtime. Cal was up at the half. Virginia, you know, obviously pushes it to an extra period. They win there. Does that tell us to slow down a little bit on Virginia? Because it was a home game, or is that, hey, you know what, Cal's got real talent, they played like it, this is what happens when they play like it, they can take a top five team, you know, to an extra period, even in a road game. What did you make out of those 45 minutes of basketball?
I mean, I don't think either team played up to their potential in that game. Like it wasn't a game that was played particularly well. I mean, even beyond like the whole Virginia likes to play sloppy basketball games and, you know, all that stuff that people say that's been kind of proven wrong this year, given their offensive skill. This was a bad game of basketball, pure and simple. Virginia did not play well. California certainly didn't play up to their potential, I would say. They came in with a good game plan and were there every time Virginia wanted to run something for the first 30 minutes of the game. Kuonzo came in with a good defensive game plan, and then the entire thing fell apart in the last 7 minutes. I think they scored, I don't know if they scored a field goal in the last 7 minutes of regulation, to be honest. It was really, really bad, really, really ugly basketball. Just, I don't know how much to take away from it either way. I mean, Cal still hasn't looked particularly good this year at any point beyond the St. Mary's win, which looks pretty good, I would say. And St. Mary's is out to 9-1, but St. Mary's also, their best wins are Stanford and UC Irvine, so there's nothing really to write home there. I think the jury's still out on them. Outside of that, they don't have a top 150 win right now.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see them have Davidson at home coming up here before the new year. And then on New Year's Day, they get Colorado. And on the 3rd, they get Utah. So I think we're going to learn more about them over the course of their next 3 games, right up until January 3rd. But the book's still out on them. I mean, they could go anywhere from winning the Pac-12 to missing the NCAA tournament right now. You know what I mean? Like, and it wouldn't be crazy by any stretch.
Norlander, so back in the preseason, I don't remember who you picked to win the ACC. Do you remember who you picked to win the ACC?
I picked Virginia.
Who would you pick, right? Would you stick with Virginia right now?
I think I would, barely. I would go, yeah, I'd go Virginia 1, Carolina just behind them. It's close. I actually think that Cal, it wasn't a great game, but Cal, with what it did and going into Virginia, And the way it lost is frustrating for Cal fans because, you know, they hold a 6-point lead in overtime. They held a double-digit lead late into the second half. They weren't able to hold on to that. Overall, it's frustrating, but I think it's signs of positive development. But they – and it – a good thing, but now that's that they've expired all sorts of moral victories here. Cal has now got to absolutely start paying off some dividends and showing us that they can be the team that we thought it would be. We had this team as a preseason top 15 team in the country, and it's not that right now. As for the ACC, I'll still take Virginia. It was sort of aberrational what the Wahoos did against Villanova with that offensive output. It was kind of insane. I mean, really, really good offensive team so far this season regardless, but yeah, I'll still go Virginia by a hair over Carolina. Then I think I take Duke, then Miami. Really, really close.
You're not concerned about Emil Jefferson being out for a couple of months?
I'm presuming I'm taking Duke at, yeah, I guess if we're going standings-wise, Miami ahead of Duke isn't ridiculous. I would say at full strength, I would take Duke barely ahead of Miami.
They have five of the top 11 teams at KenPom: Virginia, Louisville, Duke, Carolina, and Miami.
Yeah. Crazy, right?
And those five could finish in almost any order, and it wouldn't be weird to me.
It would be weird if Louisville won the league. I still don't buy them at all.
Let's talk about Louisville for a second, because they won again last night. They won huge, right? They're now sitting
Andre McGee Classic.
It was the Andre McGee Classic,
right?
And so they're 10-1. The only loss is a close loss at Michigan State when Michigan State had Denzel Valentine. Like, you could argue, I think some people would argue, that Louisville's most impressive performance to date is the one loss as opposed to any of the 10 wins. Because the 10 wins, like, they've played nobody, right? They've beaten nobody.
But I will say they are. But they've played nobody. And
they beat the hell out of everybody.
Yes.
Their 10 wins have all come by at least 20 points. At least 20 points. I mean, they're killing everybody. They're top 20 in offensive efficiency, top 5 in defensive efficiency. They're one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the country. This is a good basketball team, even if they don't have the wins. I get some pushback because I've got them ranked in the top 10 right now, mostly pushback from Kentucky fans because they just are going to push back against anything that suggests Louisville might be good. But I know that they don't have the wins, but that's got more to do with their schedule than it does their ability, I think. I mean, that's a good basketball. Everything. From the Hall of Fame coach to the transfer who's killing to all the advanced numbers, like, Louisville's a good basketball team. I don't understand how you could we can debate whether they're really top 10 or top 20.
Yeah, that's I guess let me be clear. Yeah. One, I'll say I was wrong in the preseason.
I was wrong in the preseason too.
We ranked that the 1-351. We had Sam and I had Louisville 50, and we definitely said, "Are we putting Louisville too high?"
I didn't say that, but you were pretty high on that.
no, absolutely. You were like, you know, we might want to have Louisville more in like the 115 range. I was like, Sam, let's be reasonable. So I was wrong about that. Is it a top 25 team? I'm pretty much ready to say that now, but I don't buy Louisville being a top 3 ACC team. I don't buy Louisville being a team that I would.
You could be top 3 ACC and still not be top and still be in the top 5.
Fair enough. But I wouldn't even say right now that I look at Louisville and be like, yeah, I'm pretty comfortable penning them into the Sweet 16. I just want to see them play against more legitimate teams before I get there. But they have looked very strong, and Damian Lee's inclusion to that roster has been as vital as we expected it to be. And we haven't really covered everything from last night, but since we're on the topic of Louisville, and when CBS has that game
It's America's most watched network.
That's right. And Louisville, Kentucky is happening on Saturday in Rupp. KenPom has that as a 1-point outcome, by the way, which is wild. I think Kentucky's going to win with some comfort, and I say that having been critical of what Kentucky is. What are you guys expecting from that? I'm definitely super intrigued by it, and I hope it's a really good game because it's on our network, and I love when Kentucky-Louisville is close because they've had some really fantastic games, especially over the past decade. But I'm not necessarily thinking that Louisville's offense is going to show up in bunches at Rupp.
You mean Louisville's top 20 offense in America?
Yes.
I think you're holding on to the past too much, Norlander.
Yeah, I have no idea what to expect from this game. None. you know, Damian Lee's been incredible this year. Donovan Mitchell's been really good too. I really like him. He's a freshman that I talked to, like, a few scouts that, you know, went by Louisville practice early in the year, and they told me, like, Donovan Mitchell, watch out for him. And I was like, okay, whatever. I mean, that's fine. And he's been as good as expected. I mean, he's a great athlete. The jump shot hasn't come around yet, but he can get into the lane whenever he wants. And I'm excited to see him go up against Jamal Murray. Onuwaku's a guy that is big. And can defend the paint and is mobile. And then Trey Lewis has been awesome this year too, beyond even Damian Lee, the transfer from Drexel. So there's a lot of talent here on this Louisville team. I don't know how much I buy them top 10 versus top 20, but I do think that this is a top 20 team talent-wise. And they're a little bit more experienced than Kentucky. They seem to be playing better than Kentucky. It's hard to pick against the Wildcats in Rupp, but this is the kind of game where Kentucky kind of needs to figure themselves out quickly, and I don't know if they're there yet.
Well, here's the thing. Like, here's the thing, right? So Kentucky, they've got the early win over Duke, which looked great, and they looked really good. But, like, what does that mean? We don't even know what that means now, right? It was a neutral court very early, and we don't know how good Duke is. Like, I'm not sure how good Duke is. So, like, and outside of that, what do they got? They got a home win over Arizona State. I think Arizona State's okay. But, like, really, outside of that, like, if Kentucky had to go to Michigan State, let me ask you this question. If Kentucky had to go to Michigan State and play against the Spartans and Denzel Valentine, could they keep it to 4 points?
That'd be too tough an ask.
Probably not. Because
that's what Louisville did. I mean, everybody focuses on Louisville hadn't beaten anybody, and I get it.
Yeah, their most impressive performance of the year is losing to Michigan State.
Right. I just if you would have asked me this, I guess this is the way I would say it. If you would have asked me Kentucky-Louisville December 26th at Rupp Arena, we talk about it in the preseason, I say Kentucky without hesitation. You asked me 2 weeks ago, I say Kentucky without hesitation. You asked me today, I might still say Kentucky, but I don't feel good about it at all. Like, you know, like that Kentucky team, Norlander, you and I watched them this past Saturday in Brooklyn. Like, they didn't, they didn't just lose a game. They got beat bad by a very average Ohio State team.
And if it wasn't for Jamal Murray having by far the best game of his life, I mean,
they lost by 20.
It would have been horrendously bad, without a doubt. And now, if Kentucky does lose this game to Louisville, one, we'll definitely talk about it on Monday's podcast, but it will then open up the conversation of just how bad the SEC is going to wind up being overall, things considered. I understand South Carolina is still undefeated. That schedule is also plenty suspect to this point. But Vanderbilt, I mean, you couldn't have expected Vanderbilt to go in and win at Purdue. I understand that they weren't at full strength. But, I mean, Purdue looked really, really good, and Vanderbilt just didn't impress, I guess, overall. Sam wrote about that game. He can kind of go into it more. But we have talked on this podcast about how the SEC is improving, and I think, big picture, it is still trending up. But right now, the returns through the first 6 weeks of the season haven't given us what we thought the league would be.
No, it hasn't. Like, okay, like, who do you believe in the SEC? Well, actually, forget that. Let's take it, sort of go through the league, and who's better or worse than what we thought they'd be? Than what anybody thought they'd be. Kentucky, at this moment, worse, right? By definition,
yes.
Worse. Like, not bad, but worse than they were supposed to be. Vanderbilt, worse.
Worse.
Right.
Yeah.
Florida?
About the same.
Yeah, probably maybe a little better, but not notice. Like, you know, they're 8-3. They haven't beaten anybody. They're whatever.
Yeah, I mean, their three losses are to, like,
good teams.
Top 12 teams.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
we don't know a ton about where they are yet.
Right. I'd say they're about, like, you know, they're a scratch, right? Let's call them a scratch. South Carolina, better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Clearly better, right? Okay. Texas A&M, I think, better.
About the same.
I thought
they would be the second best team in the league.
Yeah,
so.
About the same. They're 9-2. I've got them ranked in the top 25-1. Yeah, look, but I had them ranked in the top 25-1 in the preseason. So, like, they're about the same, right? Let's call them a scratch. Georgia?
Worse.
Probably worse, but, like,
probably
whatever.
A little bit worse, yeah.
Ole Miss, probably better?
Yeah.
I mean, they're 10-2.
I'll give them a little better than I thought they'd be.
They beat nobody, but, like, they've won games. I'm not going to say they've been
leaps and bounds better. I will say they've been a little better than expected.
Just a little. Maybe not. LSU, worse.
Without a doubt.
And then Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama, Auburn, Mississippi State, Missouri. Like, who cares, right?
They're well, just, yeah, I mean.
I mean, all that, if you want to take them team by team.
Playing to expectation, all the teams you mentioned, have at least three losses, and all of them have, or all, and many of them have five losses. So,
so of all the SEC teams, all of them, which one, how many are actually like significantly better?
Only South Carolina.
I think only South Carolina. That's it.
Yeah. Everybody and else even is. South Carolina's got an absolutely god awful non-conference schedule. So we don't even know what the Gamecocks are going to be.
I think they're good. I think they're good.
I think they're putting themselves in a very nice position to make an NCAA tournament, without a doubt, and that's good. And Frank Martin's kind of due for that, but I'm not going to sit here and say that's definitely a top 25 team right now.
I'm not sure of that either. South Carolina fans are on me. They're like 11-0. Why don't you rank them? And I could. I mean, that's a team.
They don't have a top 50 win.
Their best win is Tulsa. Like that's it. And Tulsa is not as good as we thought Tulsa should be, right?
They have two top 100 wins. Like this is a not. I mean, we don't know anything about them yet. You know? Like it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, listen, 11-0 is great. Because that's as good as you can be against, like, once you schedule, you know, being undefeated on December 23rd is as good as you could possibly be, but there ain't a whole lot there, you know. I will say that they've won at Clemson. They beat a Tulsa team that I think's okay, and they handled St. John's last night pretty easily, but a lot of people have handled St. John's easily except for Syracuse.
I know.
How did Syracuse lose that game? Are we ever going to figure out? Like, are they going to do a 30-for-30 someday on how Syracuse lost to St. John's in 2015?
We might need a 1-for-1 on that. It's just so – that's just so bizarre. St. John's, I mean, the roster, we don't have to spend any time on that.
That's an interesting observation about the SEC. Like, of all the teams, who's – most of them are either about what they're supposed to be or worse. And only South Carolina, we can say, is better than we thought they were going to be. And we don't even know how good South Carolina is.
Yeah.
And the other thing, and we talked about this, Norlander and I did, with our buddy Jeff Goodman over the weekend. Like, if this Kentucky season, I don't want to say goes off the rails, but like if it doesn't go as planned, it would be the third time in a four-year span that they haven't done what they were supposed to do in the preseason. Like, basically, for the past 4 years, they've been – I think ranked top two in the preseason every year, either one or two, based on the talent on the roster. But if you go back to 2013, they, that was the NIT year, right? That was Nerlens Noel. Okay, so that was a preseason number one team that ended up in the NIT. That's a disappointment. Then 2014, that was a preseason, number one or number two team. They were right there. And they were 24-10 going into the NCAA tournament. They were an 8 seed. Now, they got hot, and they went all the way to the championship game where they lost to Connecticut. But that was not a good team for the regular season. They underachieved drastically.
Kentucky fans don't want to hear that.
You're
speaking truth. I'm just saying they're going to be like, don't care. Made the title.
I mean, that ended up being a successful year based on results. Okay. But the process was not.
Okay, let me rephrase. We'll put it this way. Past four seasons, 2013, NIT. Preseason top five, NIT.
Didn't even win an NIT game.
Didn't. No. Shout out to Bob Morris.
That's right.
2014, preseason top five team, 8 seed in the NCAA tournament. 2015, they were great. 38-1, went to the Final Four. This year, again, we don't know how this is going to go, but if it doesn't go well, it would be three times in a four-year span where a preseason top five Kentucky team didn't even come close to living up to expectations. Like, it doesn't mean...
You know what I think Gary's saying right now? He's saying fire John Calipari.
I'm just saying when you look at it year by year, like, really, how good is the guy?
Yeah. I'm saying fire John Calipari.
No, I'm not saying that.
Christmas troll right there.
No, the guy's a Hall of Famer. Like literally a Hall of Famer. He's unbelievable. As I've said a million times, listen up, Kentucky fans, as I've said a million times, if you put me in charge of a basketball program tomorrow and told me I had to hire one guy to run it, I'd hire John Calipari. That's the guy I would hire. And I'd take all the negative stuff that comes along with that, to the extent that there's negative stuff that comes along with that, but that's the guy, all right? So I'm joking around. But it is, like, what I'm saying is actually true. Again, we can even leave this year out of it. Two of the past three seasons, they've underachieved for 4 months. They were preseason top five, NIT, preseason top five, 8 seed, preseason top five, then they were awesome last year. I'm not going to like nitpick them for not winning a national championship, even though they were preseason number one or whatever. They were awesome. But this year, like, it's not off. I don't know. That's just a conversation that I bet you if it's not started already, let them lose to Louisville Saturday in Rupp Arena, it'll start right then.
You know what the funniest part about this conversation is? Goodman's not even here, and he's going to get crap about this on Twitter because you guys were talking about Kentucky, like away from Twitter or away. This conversation started.
Well, you have to understand, like, we were talking about Kentucky in Barclays Center while Kentucky was down 15 points to Ohio State, and the conversation just, you know, sort of develops into, you know, what if this Kentucky team what if it doesn't happen for them? It'll be the third time in 4 years that it hasn't happened for them. You know, again, NIT 8 seed, awesome last year, and then whatever happens here. So, like, he wasn't banging on Calipari as much as he was. I actually thought it was a rare, interesting observation from Goodman. So, okay, gun to head, who you picking Saturday, Louisville or Kentucky?
Oh, Kentucky. I'll say Kentucky by 9. Sam?
Kentucky in a one possession game.
I'm gonna go
in a one possession game.
I'm gonna go Louisville. I think.
Yeah, again, I'm really close to going Louisville.
Wow.
I think if I have to wake up day after Christmas and bet money on it, which I might do. I think if we stipulated that the drunk bet
that might be the only game, by the way.
It's the only top 25 game. I don't know if it's the only game, but it is definitely the only top 25 game. So if the stipulation for last call for drunk bets, by the way, I'm so
excited. It is the only game on Saturday, by the way.
It's the only college basketball game?
Yeah.
Dude, I thought that was the case.
And because it's the day after Christmas and a Saturday, you can reasonably be drunk at 11 a.m. So it might be the drunk bet for Saturday.
Last call for drunk bets is, you know, I checked the comments last night. Can we just real quick talk about
what happened to George Washington at the Paul?
Listen, has been a nice team that's been just cruising under the radar, and GP logs in his drunk bet. He thinks it's automatic money. I mean, I love the hashtags and I love the sentiments on Twitter when he's basically like, "Let's go, let's go pay for Christmas presents, everyone." George Washington's going to cover 6 against DePaul, and what happens? DePaul wins by 21 points.
What in the world?
On the road, the GW's only loss to that point had been a 5-point loss against Cincinnati. Very bizarre. I think GW is actually going to get into the tournament comfortably because I think it's going to do really well in A-10 play. But that's going to be just an absolute wart on the resume. I can't explain it. Who can ever explain DePaul?
I couldn't wait to get George. I couldn't wait to wake up this morning and get George Washington out of the top 25 and 1. I couldn't even look at him anymore.
I'm cracking up reading these comments.
Oh, dude.
Okay, comments are
here's what's
rough.
Funny about drunk bets. You guys know how this started. It's just like it's a gimmick. It's just gimmicky. It's not meant to be anything more than that, right? But sometimes you get these serious gamblers, and they roll their eyes at me as if I'm not rolling my eyes at myself. Like, isn't it pretty clear that I'm rolling my eyes at myself? Like, do you know how much time I spend on that? I look at the late games. Anything that the stipulation has got to tip at no earlier than 9 p.m. Eastern, and so I just look at the late games and I go, okay, there's one. What's something that I could maybe make a funny hashtag about? Like, that's it. Like, it's just a gimmicky little thing. And what you'll find out about sports gambling, like it's a lot like flipping a coin. Like, you're just gonna be, you know, you can either be right or wrong. Like, that's it. You can either be right or wrong. Like, you take GW. Okay, who's going to cover?
You can push. I mean,
Push, obviously. But, like, you know. But, like, my point is, the people who are really great at it are going to hit about.
Is it like if you're really amazing, you hit like 54% or something crazy?
Yeah, let's just say like 56, 57%.
Yeah.
And the people who are really terrible at it can hit like 45%. Like, it's like there ain't a whole lot of different. Now, that matters if you're betting real money. But the way sports gambling actually gets you, this is one thing I learned last year, because I picked last call for drunk bets every night of the season where there was a game that qualified. And at the end of the year, I think I finished one game over 500. The truth is, like, if you just randomly pick every night one game, you're going to be right around 500 at the end. I could do it with hockey. I could do it with college basketball. Like, it wouldn't matter. Like, probably not hockey. Like, yeah, hockey, whatever.
Can we please have Parrish doing like drunk hockey bets?
You don't think I've ever made drunk hockey bets?
I want them on CBSSports.com.
You get to that part of the calendar where there ain't much going on, and you look up and it's like, okay, Stanley Cup playoffs on NBC Sports Network tonight. Let's get it. You know, and
just the idea of Parrish looking up the Calgary Flames' roster is amazing.
Dude,
to me.
I can't tell you how.
No, seriously, like Saturday and Sunday, there is a 95% chance Parrish makes a hockey bet.
No, it's like, yeah, there's like, if there's nothing going, like, you know how it is. Like, sometimes you just got to get involved in something. I've got a subscription to MLS based off, I got bored in the summer one day. I've got an MLS subscription based on nothing more than I got bored in the summer one day. I've got a WNBA subscription. Like me, like there's a handful of me and my friends that just like we have fun with it. But where sports gambling gets you is when you start chasing losers. If you can really just say, I'm just going to pick two games, three games, whatever it is, and bet the same amount of money every time, then you'll be, you won't win, but you won't lose big. But like where they get you is, and this is where they get you. You say, okay, GW minus six, let's get it. And then you max bet that. And then they're down whatever they are down at the half. And you go, okay, let's get on this halftime line. We'll get it back. We'll get what. And then now you've lost both of them. And next thing you know, you're trying to get Northern Iowa at 1 a.m. And it turns into a disaster. That's the way they get you.
And that's how children.
This is not off of experience. This is not. Not what happened last night.
No, it's not. You know what? I was like, if I would have been awake, there's a 100% chance I would have tried to get on that Northern Iowa situation. But that just looked weird to me. Northern Iowa was an underdog to Hawaii. You noticed that, right?
Yeah, because Hawaii might have the biggest home court advantage of any team in the country.
Because it's in Hawaii.
Yeah.
So I didn't have anything to do with that. Shout out to Bill Self, though, for getting that GW money back last night.
That San Diego State team is so bad.
Yeah, that's I don't know if that's worth podcast time necessarily, but
it's not. Let's stop.
Here's the point I was trying to make before I started rambling about sports betting. If we made Louisville, Kentucky the drunk bet for Saturday, in fact, I might do a special edition of Last Call for Drunk Bets. Special edition Last Call for Drunk Bets on Saturday morning. Like, hey, it's a weekend. Let's start drinking early and make bets. I might take Louisville. I really might take Louisville. I don't feel great about it. It's like I'm not sitting here, you guys are crazy. I'll show you. Louisville's going to run Kentucky off the court. I don't necessarily believe that. But I think at this moment, Louisville might be the better basketball team.
And isn't that something wild to say? I don't know. We'll see. It should be. I do think it will be a very telling game. If Louisville is able to go in and outright win or keep it really close at Rupp, then I think people will start to take the Cardinals even more seriously to that point. Not that they aren't now, but, you know, national game against Kentucky, best rivalry in the sport outside of Carolina and Duke. I think that's certainly something that is going to catch a lot of people's attention. So
it's funny you framed it that way. I think it's better than Carolina Duke right now. When you have Calipari and Patino involved, I think it makes it better than Carolina Duke.
Oh, I agree.
I don't want to spend the next 20 minutes talking about this, by the way. But like,
we don't need to.
Since Calipari Patino got there, I think it adds an entirely different dynamic to that rivalry. Like in a different time, Duke Carolina.
It's the best current rivalry. Historically, Duke Carolina has Duke Carolina play every year.
I agree with
Kentucky
that.
Louisville went ages without being played, but I would say it's the best current rivalry in the sport.
I think that's true.
GP, can you just give us a little bit of your Christmas update every podcast every year usually? Any interesting Christmas stuff that you can leave us with as listeners could be listening to this on their way to relatives and family's houses for the holiday season?
Well, I would say a couple of things. Last year we spent Christmas in Telluride. That was terrific.
I thought about that. You're not going back there this year.
You know what was odd? Like my 12-year-old, he doesn't care about anything, or like he pretends that he doesn't care about anything. Like he's really like, you know, shrugs his shoulders at everything. And yet the one thing he actually expressed emotion about was he loved, like it was beautiful. Like I cannot overstate it enough. Like if you can ever, like, It was my first time to Telluride, and like being there for Christmas, I loved it. Like I want to go back every year. Like that was my plan, go back every year. I cannot overstate how great I thought it was. Just every aspect of it. Wake up on Christmas morning, you don't have to deal with your family. But it's like the mountains and the snow. Like I live in the South, so we don't get that really. Like I just thought it was unbelievable. I could not wait to go back. And my 12-year-old like actually said he didn't like being away from his grandparents and his cousins and that kind of stuff. And so it's like the one thing he said he cares about. So I felt like I had to pay attention to him. And so we didn't go for strictly that reason. He wanted to be home for Christmas. So we are going to be home for Christmas. And also we are, we could have our entire house devastated by a tornado. We're in the middle of tornado.
Hold on. So did you actually go on the Weather Channel this morning?
I swear to God, I was on the Weather Channel this morning.
I forgot to DVR. I knew you were going to be on, and I didn't do it.
How about this?
How did that even happen?
Okay. Wait. I thought that you meant like Parrish turned on the Weather Channel this morning.
No, I was
actually like on TV.
Dude, I was on the Weather Channel this morning. All right, let me explain this to you. So Josh Wexler is a guy who used to work for, I believe, Sporting News Radio, right? But certainly one of the national radio brands. And his name popped up in my phone yesterday. Like, if I don't know who you are, or I won't answer it, or if I know who you are and I don't want to talk to you, I won't answer it. But I thought that, okay, Josh is calling to book me on some show. Like, I haven't heard from him in a while. I answered the phone. And I was like, Josh, how you doing? And he said, it's normal stuff, how the kids, all that. And he said, hey, I've got a weird request for you. I said, okay, like, what's up? And he said, I'm no longer in sports radio. And I said, okay. And he said, but I do work at the Weather Channel. I said, okay. He said, and I was wondering if we could get you on tomorrow morning to talk about the severe weather that's coming your way. And I said, sure. And I said, before tomorrow morning, I'll figure this out. But I know this sounds dumb because I'm like just sitting here working on a Kay Felder column. But what severe weather? I don't know what you're talking about. It's 65 degrees outside. Like, it was 65 degrees yesterday. I said, I don't even. And he said, well, that's part of the problem. It's really warm and it shouldn't be. And you've got tornadoes on the way, tornado possibilities on the way, severe thunderstorms. And like, it's going to get really, really bad. And I said, well, that's good to know. I appreciate you letting me know. And sure, if you need me, I'll be there. So yeah, I was a special guest on the Weather Channel this morning to discuss how.
Yeah, but what are you providing them? I live on the corner of Memphis and Tennessee, right. Memphis and Mississippi, and a tornado might hit my house. I'm still not getting this.
No.
Why are they putting you on television on the Weather Channel?
I'll ask you.
Last call for tornado bets? I don't get this.
No, listen. It was just as weird from my perspective as it is from yours. No, they wanted to ask me. They said, I don't know if you know, I don't really watch the Weather Channel. I turned it on this morning to like prepare. but one of the things you find out about the Weather Channel, for people who don't watch it, all they do is talk about the weather. And you can run out of that pretty quickly, right? So you need all sorts of different angles. So they wanted to bring in somebody from Memphis to discuss how Memphians are preparing for this possible tornado situation. And I explained to them that I think they were hoping that I would tell them, like, oh yeah, the city's in an uproar and like we're buckling down now. But the thing about tornado warnings that's a little like in this part of the country, like I grew up with tornado warnings. It's like practically, you know, every other week. It's like a tornado warning, get in the hallway at school, a tornado warning, there's the siren. Like, we have a siren not far from my home. We hear it all the time. And yet I've never seen a tornado my whole life. I've never been personally affected by a tornado. So the weird thing about this part of the country, when you hear about a tornado warning, is you almost become desensitized to it. Like, you're just sort of not like, okay, whatever. Like, when you hear ice storm warning, like, you know, like the roads are about to get icy. You know that's going to affect you. You hear snowstorm warning. You know that, like, it's about to be snow in the south. That's going to affect you. But a tornado warning, there's a better than good, in fact, almost 100% chance it's not going to affect you. So I don't know that we take them as seriously as we probably should. But the truth is, like, we could have tornado warnings all day today, and I'd probably be fine. But the crazy thing about that is, like, if you're not fine, you're not fine. Like, it doesn't affect you in any way, or it destroys your life and possibly ends it. So it's a weird dynamic. And then they were like, okay, well, thanks, Gary. so that's sort of the way it went down, right? That's a reasonable answer for tornadoes, isn't it? I feel like I'm a little bit of a tornado warning expert.
Listen, safety to your family.
We had almost gone this podcast with me not being the predominant talker. And then we've screwed it up again.
No. You underestimate people so much. Like, what are you talking about? You talk like 80% of the podcast even before that.
I didn't feel like that. I do. I hear it from. I'm very aware of it now. So like, I try to go, Sam, tell me about Kay Felder as an NBA prospect, and I just try to shut the F up. And then here we are. I'm rambling about the Weather Channel 15 minutes.
Hey, I did set you up for it. So.
Yeah, this one I actually. Seems like a smart decision.
Right. Well, listen. Go argue with Rothstein, Norlander. Leave me alone.
I'm done arguing for the holidays.
Be nice to people. It's Christmas, for crying out loud. Anyway, I don't have any really big Christmas plans. We got family coming over, and we're going to, you know, it is fun when you have kids. The 12-year-old, he's getting a little, you know, he's not really emotionally invested in Santa Claus anymore. But the 2-year-old, like, he you know, he's fired up, right? So it's fun. Like, Christmas with kids is a lot of fun.
Are you, my young one, he doesn't even know.
No idea.
This is almost a freebie for us because he has no concept yet. I mean, he's getting stuff, don't get me wrong, but it's not, next Christmas will be the one where he really has any sort of idea of a concept of Santa. But
sure.
One more question here. Can we get the eggnog stance of the podcast here? Because I'm very anti-eggnog.
I don't mind it, but it ain't something I'm down with. Like, I'm not, like, stocking up on it.
I can't stand it.
Here's a hot take. I've never tasted eggnog.
Oh, God, Sam. We got to live a little.
Well, I'd just rather have beer or,
yeah.
Like,
I'm not against that.
Drink.
Yeah. Like, I'm more pro vodka for Christmas.
That's not holiday dependent, GP.
Yeah, I'm more. I'm more vodka. So, like, last night when I was sort of in a group text with some of my degenerate gambling friends, and we were trying to figure out how we were going to handle this George Washington second half situation. And so I was like, one of them asked me about the Weather Channel, and I was like, yeah, I got to do it. And they said, dude, go. Are you doing it from your little studio in your house? And I said, yeah, I guess so. And they said, go put a New Amsterdam bottle on the shelf behind you. Like, you know, people have books and pictures.
Yeah, yeah.
So
they send you stuff?
Yeah, no, I don't know if they'll send me anything, but like if you go find a picture of me on the Weather Channel this morning, there's a New Amsterdam vodka bottle sitting right behind me. It's part of the setup.
Oh my gosh, Parrish. All right, have a Merry Christmas.
You have a Merry Christmas, Norlander.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas to everybody. We're going to be back on Monday, and we'll look back at Louisville, Kentucky, of course, and whatever else. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
We'll talk about New Year's plans, probably.
And talk about New Year's plans, which for Norlander and me is probably going to be sitting at home taking care of kids, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. All right. We'll talk to you Monday. Bye.
See you.